Thank you for listening to this audio recording from LimoPlanet 2020 Free the Future. The following talk was presented at LimoPlanet, the Free Software Foundation's annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology. For more information on LimoPlanet, visit limoplanet.org/conference. LimoPlanet is a live conference with speakers who often use visual slides in their presentations. We have only selected talks for this audio feed that do not overly rely on visuals, but if you would like to see a speaker's slides, they are available at media.limoplanet.org. LimoPlanet speakers do not represent the Free Software Foundation. As part of our mission to show how important free software is to everyone, we have speakers talking about their use of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take positions on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedoms of all computer users, LimoPlanet is made possible by thousands of individuals who, like you, donate what they can. To keep this work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss.
All right. A little introduction about myself. I'm a programmer. I became a programmer because of the Atari 2600. I saw the games on that machine and knew that that's what I wanted to do. I've worked on several free software projects, mostly games. I end up trying a lot of different free software games and sometimes write blogs about modifications I make to them. On this slide, you can see the two smaller images are Color Monsters and ViOBite. They were written for the Pocket Arcade. And so you've got a screen size about the size of your thumbnail. So that's why they're rather small in that image, to give you some impression as to what you had to work with. On the bottom left is Trollbridge, and next to that is Ostrich Riders, one of the games I'll be talking about today. Now, I do write articles about games, but a lot of the drive behind game restoration has been that machine you see up on the screen, which is an arcade machine that my son's Cub Scout den helped put together. So I needed to have games to run on it. So why do we care about preserving games? If I had to take a guess, I'd say Lori Nagel's talk on the importance of free software games will probably cover this better than anything I'm going to do. I will just say that games are part of our culture. We make an effort to preserve comic books, books, and movies. We should do the same for games. Unfortunately, it ends up being a little harder to do. One of the ways that we end up keeping old games is emulators. Emulators are great. They allow you to play the game exactly as it was. On the right here, we have a picture of Dragon Stomper from the Atari 2600, one of the first console RPGs. On the left is He-Man for the PlayStation 2. That game was never released in the U.S., but I knew that at some point I'd be able to play it on an emulator. Now, my laptop is a little slow for playing a lot of PlayStation 2 games at full speed still. I personally have not been involved in the development of any emulators, really. Now, what I have done is worked on rewriting engines. So in this case, what you're doing is you're creating a new engine to run the data files from the old games. Now, when you're doing that, you get better performance than under a emulator. And you have the option of adding in new features, but it can sometimes be pretty hard depending on the structure of the game. Now, some of these will have the same problems that I'm talking about here. And that's when a program is made available in source code, but you can't go over and build it anymore. You have troubles getting it up and running. Now, what the defining feature of free software is the fact that you get the source code. So you have the ability to modify the program. Because of that, we tend to ship the software a bit differently than commercial programs. We tend to have the source code available, but not necessarily the binaries. A distribution might provide the binaries. You might be able to get them from a Flatpak or something similar. But other than that, you generally need to compile it yourself. And quite frankly, if you want to take advantage of free software and make modifications, you're going to need to build it yourself anyways. So the first thing you have to do when you decide that you found something that you want to try out, you have to figure out how to build it. You would think that this would be the simple step, but in reality, we're not great at producing documentation for this. I'm guilty of doing it myself with my own programs. So it sometimes takes a little while to figure out how to actually build it. Even after you've figured out what steps need to be done, programs typically use libraries and tools written by someone else. So you need to make sure that you get all of those dependencies up and running. If they're included in your distribution, it's generally pretty easy. If not, then you're going to have to build them yourself, which again may cause you to run into troubles. Once you have all the dependencies, you get all excited, you build the program, and you get a compile error. Now, I don't think that most people are going to go past this. If they get a compile error, they're going to give up on your program. I happen to be one of those stubborn people who tend to keep going anyways. Now, the compile error could be something simple, like the language made some minor change, and so you just need to update the code. Or it could be something much more complex, like the dependencies that you have. It used an older version of it, and now the newer version has a different interface. Once you actually get it to the point of compiling, then you get the more fun errors. The game just crashes. Now, Unix programs traditionally install their data files in user share or user local share. Games on Windows typically store their data in the same directory as the program. Free software games, they vary on which approach they take. So it can be a little bit of a trick to figure out what you need to do there. If it is crashing at startup, I typically find that it is because it can't find data files. Once you get past that point, you may end up in a situation where it starts up, but it doesn't do anything. the display is blank, or maybe it doesn't accept any input. And so then you're going to have a lot more debugging time trying to figure out what's wrong. I'm going to go through some of the changes I've made in restoring games. So first, we're going to start off with Ostrich Riders. Ostrich Riders I found when I was looking for a Joust clone. I wanted it to show my kids. This wasn't the only one I found, but I found that this one I thought was the most promising. The program unfortunately didn't have a makefile. The only way to build it was to use the CodeBlocks project. The program, Ostrich Riders, uses the SFML library, which is the simple and fast multimedia library. Unfortunately, Fedora included SFML2, and the game used SFML1. So I got compile errors when I tried to build it using the newer version of SFML. Now, if I had looked a little bit further into it, I would have discovered that Fedora actually included SFML1 as well. They only just removed that in Fedora 31. So I could have avoided porting it to SFML2 for a while, but eventually I was going to need to do that anyways. So when SFML2 broke every single SFML1 program, none of them can be run unchanged. The developer decided that he didn't like his naming convention on for functions. So for example, we've got set color was changed to have a lowercase s. And he did this through everything, so any function call needed to be converted. There was no guide for converting programs. Often I would end up having to search on the forum to try to figure out what you needed to do. So for example, set x and set y were removed, and instead there's a set position function. Now, normally you probably want to be setting the x and y together, so I can understand why you would want one function to do both. But at the same time, the maintenance of keeping the set x and set y function around would have been minimal, and it would have prevented people from having to go constantly fix their code. Personally, I try to avoid libraries that do this. I want a library to have a stable API because I don't want to have to constantly be fixing my programs. Now, I did look at the forum for SFML, and they have a roadmap where they suggest they're going to do more frequent changes to break code, but they're going to be smaller and they're going to include a conversion guide. That's great, but I think I would personally try to avoid SFML still. I understand that it's a good library and people use it, but I personally don't like having to fix my code that often. Okay, so I've got Ostrich Riders up and running. It's a Joust clone. Why do we care about having it since we could just run Joust? Well, I have two kids. This is a two-player game, so it means that if I want to play, if the two kids are playing it, I'm sitting out. I don't really want to sit there doing nothing, so I added in a third player. In fact, if you modified one of the graphics to make another color for a fourth player, that could be added without too much trouble at all. And this is the advantage of open source, of free software, is that you can go over and add in new features like a third player if that's what you want to do. Now, a game doesn't have to be completely broken for it to be in need of restoration. So Shippy 1984 is included with Fedora, has been for a long time. It's a well-done Space Invaders Galaxian-type game. It doesn't necessarily look that impressive, but gameplay-wise, I found it to be more fun than some of the other other type of games like this that had more impressive graphics. Now, if you go and try to find the website, that's pretty hard to find. I did end up finding it. The author has put out a new version of Shippy 1984. The new version requires Allegro 5, whereas the old version had both support for Allegro 4 and for STL 1. And additionally, he went over and he has some common routines that he uses in a lot of his games. And so he's using those routines in the new version of Shippy 1984. And that ends up requiring Lua. Now, Shippy 1984 isn't using Lua. It's just requiring it to build because of these common routines that he's using. The game itself is completely unchanged from the version that Fedora uses. So I decided to stick with the one that Fedora has. But as I said, it uses SDL1. And SDL1 has a problem with full screen. When you use full screen, it goes over and just adds a big black border around everything. So the bigger the screen you have, the smaller the game will look inside of it. SDL does have an advantage over the SFML in that they produced a guide for changing from SDL1 to SDL2. On top of that, when they did the change, they did it because SDL1 could not support the newer graphics hardware, and so the changes were needed in order to make the games perform better. But they left as much of the old functionality as possible. So the changes you need to make are rather minimal, unlike the Switch and SFML. Now, for Shippy 1984, the graphics and input interface was isolated from the rest of the code because it had that support for Allegro 4 and for SDL1. So adding in support for SDL2 was pretty easy. The rest of the code was in pretty rough shape. Before I even could do much of anything with the code, I had to run indent on it to fix the indentation to make the code even readable. The understanding what the code is doing in a lot of cases took a lot of effort. So, for example, the health variable on the player was set to a negative value when the player died. It would then go over and increment this value until it reached zero, at which point the player would respawn. So he was basically using the health variable as a delay to when the player respawned, which makes it rather confusing when you have all sorts of logic in the game that is dependent on multiple variables. So I ended up having problems where I'd go over and break things a lot when trying to add in new features. I did end up adding in a second player to this game. This was so that it would work well on the arcade machine with two players. Now, both Shippy 1984 and Ostrich Riders, I went over and found on my own. This right here is Open Alchemist. It's a match three elements type of game. I know that people really like these type of games. My wife, including, really likes match three games. They're not really my thing. I was invited to work on a demake for this game. A demake is when you modify a program to make it look like it's running on an earlier system. So in this case, someone had made Nintendo-style graphics for this game on Open Game Art. So I was invited to help implement this version. Now, I've talked about SFML, SDL. There was also, I mentioned Allegro. But free software, we have no shortage of game libraries. And so Open Alchemist uses CLANlib. I don't like recoding things. So if everything is working, I'm hesitant to go over and modify it to, say, a different library or something. Because every time that you're, all the time you're spending recoding it, it means you're not adding any new features to the program. So I looked into CLANlib. If you try to go to the CLANlib website, you find that it's gone. Open Alchemist on Fedora uses CLANlib 2.3. I did manage to find the Git repository, and that had tags for version 3 and version 4, but no one is actually including those on in their distros. Debian and Ubuntu both include CLANlib 1. Every single release of CLANlib seems to be incompatible for the API, so you have to update your program. If you have a program that's written with CLANlib 1, you would need to update it if you wanted to run it under CLANlib 2. Given the unmaintained state of CLANlib, I decided that it really would be best to move off of it. So CLANlib is a pretty big framework. So it takes a little bit of effort to implement all the functionality that it has. So one of our goals was that we wanted to have a Windows release. To make that as easy as possible, all the libraries we wanted to use needed to be cross-compiled under Fedora. So we have SDL2 handles the graphics and input and sound. SDL2 Mixer is used for loading a variety of sound formats and has a bit of a higher level API for music. SDL2 Image is used for loading up image files. XPAT is an XML parser. Open Alchemist uses the CLANlib's XML resource files to store a lot of information. So we needed to be able to parse the XML. FizzFS is a library that provides access to a lot of archive formats. So for example, ZIP. That ended up being a bad choice in hindsight. I picked it because I had worked with it before, but FizzFS is designed more on the, you mount a zip file, and it pretends as if it was mounted over some directory, and you can mount another zip file on top of it or something like that to be able to make mods easy. So you could have a zip file that's just the modifications to the base data. And that's not the way OpenAlchemist uses zip files. So we ended up switching to using libzip in the end. It was much closer to matching what clanlib actually did. Ideally, what I would want to do when doing a change like this is I would want to change one feature at a time. So for example, take out the XML parsing from clanlib, put in the expat XML parsing, and get that up and running. Unfortunately, clanlib is pretty tightly tied together, so that wasn't really possible. Instead, I ended up commenting out all the clanlib calls and slowly adding in the features to get everything up and running again. I did write some classes to wrap the interface from clanlib. So for example, their sprite class, I wrote an equivalent class that had just the functions we needed to get it up and running. So after we had all of that up and running, we were able to create Alchemy Quest. OpenAlchemist supports different skins to it, but the flexibility wasn't enough to be able to do what we wanted for Alchemy Quest. As you can see, this supports two players as well. Again, the arcade machine tends to make me want to add new players to everything. I have found that free software games sometimes aren't very good at couch two-player. They tend to say everyone should be using network to play. I did get a little caught up in clanlib when doing this conversion. I really was curious as to what other games used clanlib. Fedora includes Super Methane Brothers. That's the only other program that uses clanlib too. Debian has a game called Trophy that uses clanlib 1. Now, eventually, after looking around, I stumbled across an old site which had some dead links, but one of those links was to Mojotron. Now, I am a big fan of the Robotron 2084. I have multiple versions of Robotron. I have it on the PlayStation. I had it as a kid on the Atari 7800. So when I saw Mojotron, my first thought was, is this a Robotron 2084 type of game? And it is. The graphics, I wasn't that impressed with. Now, it uses clanlib 0.6, which Fedora includes. So I was able to try it out without having to spend a lot of time. There were some compile errors initially, but those were pretty easy to work through. I did find that full screen does not work under Wayland. It ends up that it doesn't register any key presses. So, I will say that what I'm going to talk about here is not actually available online just yet. I'm looking at, I'd like to do some sort of bounty system to be able to help pay for the time to do this sort of conversion to perhaps allow me to do more conversions. But it will be made available as source code once that funding is reached. I was hoping to have that set up before this event, but I just haven't gotten around to it. Okay, so CLANlib 0.6, as you would expect, it's similar to CLANlib 2. The API is a little bit simpler. So some of the wrapper classes I wrote for CLANlib 2 were able to be reused with some minor changes. CLANlib 0.6 does not use XML files. Instead, it uses any style files. I looked into what you could do to get for a reader for those, but decided it was easier to just convert the any files into XML by hand. The hardest part was probably the fonts, because it wasn't clear how it was determining when the next character was found. So I ended up looking for breaks between the characters where there was no pixels being, no color being displayed. I'm not sure that's what CLANlib does, but it ended up working. Now, I really enjoyed this game, but I felt it could use a fresh coat of paint on it. So I started looking at open game art and started thinking about what you could do for a remastered version. I found contact information for the original author of the game, and he was fine with my idea of a modified version, but he didn't think it quite fit a remastered version since it was going to remove some of the humor that he had from his game. So I've been going through Open Game Art and grabbing various images to place into the game. It still needs a little more work before it's at this a state that I really want. So these are four games that I ended up upgrading or making them work better than they have in the past. But there's a lot more games out there. Games are abandoned all the time. That list of CLANlib 0.6 games that I found, there's still a lot of them there that I didn't even look at. When I looked for a Joust clone, there was at least one other that I tried and it didn't work right. So, and I didn't enjoy it enough to be able to keep working on it. I've stumbled across other games, like there was a sci-fi Oregon Trail game that someone was working on, and I would love to get that up and running, but again, there's a limited amount of time I have. So I highly encourage you that if you find a game you like, to try to help it out. Figure out what you can do to keep it running on newer systems. I tend to post on the free game dev forums. So if you have an interest in free game development, you can go there and post. My email address is here if anyone has any questions that I can't get to in the talk anyways. And I think we're at the end of my slides. Generally, when I'm doing my modifications, I like to be able to have the original game running as it was. I make all of my changes to be like an optional mode, so that way you can still have that archivist type look to it. You want me to just keep going with the questions? All right. Okay, so the question is, have I looked into Godot, that engine? I have not looked into Godot. It's been one of my projects that I've been meaning to look at for a long time, but I just haven't found the time to do that yet. I do think that it looks very interesting, and I've seen various games made using it that look very impressive, so it's something that I plan to look at. All right, so do I think Flatpak and Snap and other packaging methods will make things easier for games in the future? Well, they do and they don't. The problem is that if you're packaged them by Flatpak or something like that, you lose the advantage of it being free software, that you need to know how to build it in order to be able to make changes to it. So in that respect, I'm not that fond of them, but I understand that they're a great tool for being able to distribute your game to people who aren't developers and who aren't going to go over and make those sorts of modifications. Personally, though, I prefer it when the distribution includes it. I'm just not that fond of the Flatpak and all of those. All right, so what if the original game has a bug that people are used to and should you remove it and that sort of thing? I think I'd probably handle that on a case-by-case basis. For example, I know that Robotron 2084 has a bug where on the first level where the brains are trying to take over all the people, they will be after one Bobby and no one else until that Bobby is killed or saved. And so it became one of those things of anyone who's played that game enough, they know to go over and keep that Bobby alive for as long as possible and grab as many other people as they can while doing that. So in that respect, I think that you would have a real problem removing that feature because everyone expects that. Is there a place that you should follow me so that you can find out about this crowdfunding if when I get that up and running and that sort of thing? I do have a Hubzilla account, so that's that works with Mastodon, part of the Fediverse. I don't have it off the top of my head what it is. You can find it on the free game dev forums that I mentioned. Any of my posts, I believe I have a link to my Hubzilla social account. And of course, you could email me and I'd try to make sure people would get notified. Have I ever tried Mindtest and am I a fan of it? Well, my kids really wanted mine, or my kids had some interest in Minecraft. So when I went over and got some old computers set up for them, I installed Mindtest on them instead. And so they were playing around with that for a while. They enjoyed it. My youngest is very big on finding every single mod out there to load on it. I have gone over and written a few mods myself. My youngest wanted to have the thing from the Fantastic Four in Mindtest at one point. So I took a stone golem that someone had made and modified the textures so that it looked like the thing. And he's constantly adding new blocks to it as well. When I was doing that modification to the thing, I found that my initial version, he was really tiny. And so when looking around, I found that there was a scaling factor that I needed to add to it, at which point I'm just there, wait, if there's a scaling factor, can I make a shrink gun and a growth gun? So I made it so that you could blast enemies and increase them to supersize. So yeah, I've played around with Mind Test. I like Mind Test. I think there's a lot of promise in that game. Do I have any advice for picking mods for Mind Test? Not really. I would say that there are some mods for inventory, like the unified inventory. And I find that the inventory screens on Mind Test were really awful to navigate. And so those mods make it a lot more pleasant. Other than that, I would just look for what interests you. I've played around with Mind Clone 2. I've played around with, there's a dinosaur mod that I was playing around with recently, because you can't go wrong with dinosaurs. All right, ever thought about bundling some games together like the way BSD games are bundled together and has lasted for a long time? I can't say I've thought about doing that. A lot of the games I've played around with, they all work with different engines, so I could see possibly doing something like that with, say, the first-person shooters. If you had one engine that could run a bunch of first-person shooters, I could see doing something like that. I'm not a fan of the first-person shooters, so that's not really my thing. So the games I've worked on, generally they've all had different engines, so I haven't had the ability to do something like that. I will say another way, if you wanted to get in touch with me, is I try to go to the Natick Foss user group in Natick, Massachusetts. I've also occasionally gone to I've gone to one Boston Linux user group meeting and one and a couple WLUG user groups meetings. I am on IRC, kind of. I am on IRC for this event. I generally don't go on IRC a lot. All right, thanks everyone.